Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Comic Source. I'm your host, Jace. A couple of returning creators, a couple of friends, a couple of amazing people joining me today to talk about Wonder Woman. I have artist extraordinaire Daniel St-Pierre and writer extraordinaire Tom King. Hey, gentlemen, thanks for taking the time.
What an
Hello,
absolute
everyone.
thank you for having me on. You're the
Yeah,
best.
been a little while, Tom. I know I got busy during the holidays. We didn't get to do our usual Christmas chat that we do, so.
I was like, Jace hates me. I get it. I
Man, it was so busy at Christmas this year. But anyway, yeah, we're here to talk about Wonder Woman, everybody. It's an absolutely amazing series that's going on. Before we do that, I do want to remind everybody of a couple of the creator-owned books that Tom has going on right now that you may or may not be aware of. Animal Pound, if you're a lover of pets, it's absolutely amazing from Boom Studios. And then the upcoming,
What a way to sell that book if you're a lover of
if
pets.
you're,
Oh
I'm telling you, man, I'm
my
telling you, especially that first issue. But with the fact in mind that it is a Tom King book, so yeah,
Yes.
things go sideways. Helen of Windhorn, I got a chance to read the first issue coming out from Dark Horse really soon. Again, amazing book, this mashup of kind of classic gothic stories and I don't know, Dungeons and Dragons, fantasy, Lord of the Rings, that kind of thing.
Conan the Barbarian. It's
There you
close.
go, Conan the Barbarian, absolutely amazing. And if you're wondering, oh, Daniel St-Pierre, where do I know that name from? Did the amazing, huge, gigantic, universe-changing event, Dark Crisis, that was preceded by Action Comics, which was preceded by Future State Aquaman. So very talented artist as well. So again, gentlemen, it's fantastic to have you joining me to talk a little bit of Wonder Woman. And this book, Wonder Woman, it really seems well, I know you had said, Tom, about wanting to do a new era of Wonder Woman, do something a little bit different, and that definitely seems the direction that you all are taking, but it's also a very meta book. So now that we've kind of gotten the first arc out of the way, Tom, you can look at it with a little bit of perspective, fan reaction, what have you. What are your thoughts on it? Has it been doing what you wanted to do? Is it accomplishing kind of the story that you want to tell in terms of xenophobia and the unfortunate misogyny that we still have in the world today? What are your thoughts on the run so far?
I mean, first, before I say anything, just because I forgot to at the top, let me say thank you for having me on, Jace. I love your podcast. I love you support my books. You get my books into people's hands. You have for many years, and I'm forever grateful for it. So I just want to say thank you,
I
and thanks.
appreciate that.
Is what? Yeah, Wonder Woman's turned out much better than I ever thought it would. Mostly because of Daniel. I hate to suck up to the guy who's here with me, but I had no expectation that it would be like. Look like an X-Men book from 1992, where it's just like setting the bar, and it's just like, the art blows me away on every issue. And I look at, especially they changed the paper stock on it now, so it has a shiny paper, and it just, I mean, the book just glows. It looks like it's printed in 3D the way Daniel draws. It's like nothing else. I just can't believe just how gorgeous a book it is. All the themes you mentioned, yeah, I mean, those are important, but I mean, the main purpose of the book was to say how awesome Wonder Woman is, and that will be the main purpose of the book going forward, and that's the sort of main theme of each issue, and I think that's coming across, that's working for me. Each issue is sort of dedicated to a different sort of aspect of why she's awesome. So the first one, she's a rebel. The second one, she's kind of a fighter. The third one shows her kind of, I don't know what you call her, a bluffer or something like that. And the fourth one is like, that's the one Daniel suggested, where she's just compassionate. And the fifth one, she's a sister. And the sixth one, she's a fucking kick-ass warrior. So each one is showing a different aspect of her, and now she's awesome. And that part of it, I think, is very successful too.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've thought of her as this powerful, which, that's the thing. She's a warrior born and bred. And sometimes I think we forget that. It does rear itself at times. I know the whole Maxwell Lord thing, which we won't get into, but it's nice to be reminded once in a while that she is a warrior. I don't know if you know this story, Tom, but I'm going to throw it over to Daniel, because I want you to talk, Daniel, a little bit about how you got involved in the project. It's so, high profile working with Tom, and it's been well received, obviously a lot of eyes on it. But, we talked before we had you on the very first time we had you on the podcast to talk about Future State Aquaman. I'd been already been singing your praises from the Justice League annual you'd done with Scott Snyder. And you had told us a story about getting offered Action Comics and not sure if you're going to take it because there was a sense of, wait, is this, do I really deserve this? Or is this really something that I should be doing? And how far we've come, right? From Action to that giant Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths event to now Wonder Woman. So you're so deserving, man, and you're only getting better. So talk to us a little bit about how you got on the project. Was it DC that approached you? Was it Tom? Give us the backstory.
Give us the backstory. Well, first of all, thank you for having me here as well. It's a
Oh,
big
sure.
pleasure.
Copy my thank you. Jesus
And
Christ. Do something fucking original, artist.
if you remember that I got a little bit crazy when I received the Action Comics offer, like I was like, I don't know what happened to me. Was like, I had to think about it, and my girlfriend was like, "What do you think to think? What do you need to think about it? Say yes." I was like, "Yeah, I'm stupid. What am I, why? What I need to think about? There's nothing to think about it." It was a lot worse, my reaction when I received the Dark Crisis offer. There, I just totally freaked out. I was sure that was a mix-up on the email, and they were. Making some kind of mistake, you know. And then after all the craziness on Dark Crisis, and when I finished, I was talking to my boss, and what's next? He was like, "What do you wanna do?" He showed me the next projects they were cooking at that time, and like it was hard because everything seemed awesome. I wanted to do everything. I'm a crazy DC fan, so all the possibilities were great. But then we got to the end, and the last one was like, Tom is gonna write Wonder Woman, and when I was like, okay, then I want to do Wonder Woman. There's no more
Oh.
questions. So it was
Cool.
pretty easy. Yeah.
I like that answer. It's a good answer. That's good. That's a good one.
No, I was like, okay, I'm gonna think about it. And like 2 minutes later, I was typing my email saying, yeah, Wonder Woman, but I just waited like 10 minutes extra for not to seem like a crazy guy. And 10 minutes later, I was like, yeah, I want to do Wonder Woman for sure, because I'm a huge fan of Tom, and I wanted to work with him for many, many years already.
So, Tom, what was your reaction when you heard Daniel was going to be your artist on the book?
I've said this before, so it's on the record that I did not want to do Wonder Woman. DC wanted to put me on, so I'd been, doing these 12-issue miniseries, whatever, slowly getting more and more obscure characters until I was working on Lady Cop. I didn't know like what was the obscure step after Lady Cop. It was like background character in 1972 Kirby issues. And DC's like, no, you should probably go back and do a mainstream book. And they offer me Wonder Woman. I was like, I don't know, because I don't think Wonder Woman has ever. It's so hard. It's probably the hardest DC book. I've seen so many people, try and crash and burn on it. And I was like, why would I want to go next off that cliff? And it's when they said Daniel was on it, and I was like, what? You're putting Daniel Sampora on this? Because he's coming off the Crisis event. He's coming off a huge, and I was like, oh, so you're taking this seriously. This isn't just like, Tom, fill this in for name for sales for a little while. This is like, you want to do something big. And as soon as his name was attached, I realized that, DC would be behind it, and we could do something ambitious and big with the book and make it work. And I've always felt that Wonder Woman needed someone with Daniel's kind of energy, which is like, just like this beautiful superhero, that comes out of, the David Finch school, and like just when you close your eyes and think of him sort of an ideal superhero comic, you're looking at Daniel Simpor art. I've always felt like Wonder Woman would benefit from that, and I was it was beyond my expectations, and I had no idea, God, that he would do six in a row plus two specials, which is unprecedented in comics. So yeah, that it all started with Daniel. I hate to suck up to him because he just suck up to me, but that's how I got on the book. And
Well,
then I immediately regretted it. So at least I regretted the decision and was torn about it.
I think right away that inciting event that kind of puts the Amazons on their back foot and kind of makes them, I don't know, enemy number one for the world. There's two splash pages. Well, there's one splash page that really, in the beginning, you guys can see it on my screen, that really kind of sets the tone, right? This Billings event, and I especially want to call out the reflection in the billiard ball there. That's like amazing. But yeah, like to
Yeah,
pull
that
down.
was definitely in the script for sure. I'm glad he captured my words.
But Daniel, going above and beyond once again to really tell us, I mean, this was the page where I was like, okay, this isn't going to be the typical Wonder Woman book. So yeah, Daniel, can you talk a little bit about wanting to set the tone? I mean, obviously before you even started drawing, Tom gave you some idea of the overall plot of where the story was going to head. Did that inform kind of your tone of what you wanted for composition for this piece?
Well, I remember being nervous here because were the first pages, and always the starts are tough because you want to do right and impress, and I felt a little bit more comfortable on this page because it was like an action shot, more kind my thing. I was more worried on other kind of pages where it's more like hard storytelling stuff, you know. This one was like more my comfort zone, but at the same time it need to be a big hit, a big splash, but the movement is not very flashy, you know. It's just to the table, but there's no one jumping or flying or so. It was hard to get the pose right for a big moment, but with without a big pose, you know. I don't know how to say it. Lucky we have Tomeu on the colors, that makes everything look a lot better than already may seem. He just make it shine all the time, and I was like super excited at that time, setting up the pages. This was the first time I put letterings, because in some big pages I put myself now the letters, because I wanted to integrate the letterings in some parts to the drawing, making part of the drawing itself, not just separate letters with a song, you know. So for that purpose, I felt like I needed to do it by myself, and I was like kind of scared too, because I never put letters before. But I had some good help from Bruno Redondo, who is a master at this kind of stuff. So experimenting a little bit with a new tone, and having a lot of fun at the same time.
I'm writing one of them this week, so, and I keep all my comics in the same file or the same document. So this is the description I wrote. Splash, Emily, a new character, a large Amazon Norma clothes in the middle of a dirty, smoky pool hall in a small city. She's slamming a man down brutally into the pool table, cracking the table and sending him into the floor. That's all he had. It was basically a woman slamming a man. So all the other stuff that's in that beautiful page, all the storytelling, all the expressions, how Emily looks at her arc, that's all Daniel. You're just seeing brilliance. Oh, we've lost you, Jace, or I've lost you.
No, the sound.
Oh, sorry about that. There we go. So I think, Will Eisner, right, is probably most known for incorporating the letters, the sound effects, that kind of thing into the art. So, you're standing on the shoulders of giants, Daniel, and fantastic. And you're right, Bruno does it amazing. So also, I know you want to keep pushing as an artist. You want to keep challenging yourself to get better and try new things. So it's amazing.
Always, yeah.
The other thing that's funny that you read off the description for that, Tom, because I want to talk about another classic panel from the first issue as well. Because I remember when I saw this for the first time, wanting to ask this whole idea of Wonder Woman as a warrior, but also, fighting for peace, fighting for, the world to be a better place. The dove's very symbolic here in this picture. Did your description of this splash, which was everywhere to promote and rightfully so, because it was amazing. Did you specifically call out doves? Was that something Daniel put in? Like, talk to me about the composition for this one.
I'm pulling it up. What is that? It's page 18, right in my head. Oh man, that's even less. That's a lot less.
Yeah, this one was less.
This is it. Page 18, panel one. Wonder Woman in the snow by the graves casually blocks a bullet with her bracelet. And then I put, just to be very descriptive, iconic. And look,
Well, that's
that's
the
what he
good
did.
part. I don't actually There's no need for more. When you put iconic, I know what you mean. So I think I know what I gotta do. You know, there's no need for more words or whatever. Iconic works perfect. I know what you mean. It's our job. So on top of that, I read all of your books. So I studied you before working on Wonder Woman. So I think I know a little bit at least what you mean on the script, what do you want, or maybe how do you visualize things. So I think I can keep track of your ideas because I kind of know you and I'm knowing better you and every issue, you know. So iconic is just enough. I know what you mean.
Thank God. Thank God.
So yeah.
And that was a big risk, that page. Thank God that Daniel drew it, because we kept Wonder Woman off the page until 18. And I've worked with a lot of artists who have thrown that script in the trash or called the editor and been like, make him fix this. I signed up for Wonder Woman and there's 17 pages without her. But I knew, you know, it's that thing where you're kind of building the tent. You know, it's like listening to a song where you want to hear the chorus and they're denying it to you and denying it to you, or you know, probably better if you're listening to electronic music and you're waiting for the bass to drop. Like, I knew that was our bass drop moment and that Daniel would nail it. That was the moment where people like kind of cheer.
To talk to me, Daniel, specifically about choosing to have the doves in there. What again, so symbolic and so perfect, and it makes perfect sense based on the setting or what have you. So what was that choice about?
I visualize this moment like some kind of John Woo movie, you know, and some like a cinematic way, you know, the feeling of being in the cinema and this perfect shot, and I thought like the birds could give some movement to the page, help to put everything together on the composition, and it was like a shot, you know, but the pose again, the pose is not like the most explosive pose. It's just Wonder Woman turning around. So I needed something else that make us feel the impact and the sound of a bullet and the birds flying. It was like scared, you know, for the sound, for the impact. It helped to set the tone of the what's going on the page.
That's so funny. You mentioned John Woo. Like, I think it didn't he do Face Off? Wasn't that one of his movies? There's that scene in the church, John Travolta walking in, yeah, doves. I don't know why doves would be in a church, but in the middle of the day. But yeah, and then we go to the second issue. You already mentioned, Tom, about her, you know, taking on the military and what have you, smashing tanks. And I think at that moment, coming off the first issue, which, you know, we talked about this on the podcast, it covers kind of a bigger timeline in a way. It doesn't feel like it's a big time jump, but obviously from the instigating incident to now there's already a law that's passed and, you know, extradition act and what have you. And then now all of a sudden she's taken on the US military. Was there any hesitation there that people would kind of get the wrong idea about it? You know, she's anti-America, whatever. Because to me, Wonder Woman is as American as you get, even though obviously she's not even actually a native citizen.
No, I don't know, that sort of never crossed my mind. It seems like it's one of the things I like about America is we love the rebels, you know. We're not a conformist country. It's probably one of our faults at times. But I never feel like I watch a lot of movie with a lot of cool characters throwing tanks around, and I don't remember ever like rooting for the bad guys. You know, I love Superman when the army turns on him, or even Hulk and all that stuff. So I mean, the whole point of the thing. You know, when I sort of went back to rethink of what or think about what Wonder Woman was and what made her awesome, and some of this comes from Steve Orlando. I called, just like I did before Supergirl, I called Steve before Wonder Woman because he had spent some time on the book and he's just brilliant when it comes to character. And you know, Steve was telling me like he had to always hold back when he was writing Wonder Woman because like people couldn't understand like she's how powerful her empathy was and how much she could change the world if she wanted to. And the idea of her as sort of a rebel, as someone that works against a system, just incredibly stood out to me. Because finding any way to differentiate her from Superman, as just like, you know, two nice people who saved the world. And the fact that Superman sort of enforces a status quo as does Batman, but that she doesn't, that she, she represents some sort of counterculture or counter narrative to America was, I was like, okay, that's her niche. That's what makes her different in sort of that big trinity. And yeah, I'm always in Wonder Woman. I'm always skipping kind of steps I would take normally if I was telling this narrative more slowly. Like you said, I sort of skip forward because I don't want to bother with the boring politics of it. I don't want to bo I just want to show you the awesomeness. I don't want to hold. That's what I learned from writing 85 issues of Batman. If you're ever thinking like, oh well, I want to get to this when I get to issue, when I'm at issue 50, they won't get married, but when they get to issue 100, they'll get married and people will be happy. I was like, no, I don't want to withhold joy anymore. I'm done with the withholding joy for my comic book. So I do skip stuff because I want to get to those big moments. I don't want to hold back. I don't want to think, oh, I don't want to show Wonder Woman fighting an army because then what am I going to do on issue 10? I was like, no. Show it all right now. Give this audience everything it can in this issue and worry about what more you can give them next issue.
Yeah, well, it's definitely working too because you get a sense that each issue really matters, each issue is really impactful. But obviously, the challenge there is if you always have highs, then you have no contrast. But it's been working so far. Let me ask you,
Well,
Daniel.
what's nice about that is we have the backups to sort of, give you a little aperitif so you can kind of come down from that. So I think of the balance there.
Yeah, it's definitely working as well with kind of the young Trinity, if you will. So, Daniel, we mentioned Action Comics. You went from that to Dark Crisis, where you were drawing, I don't know, hundreds of characters every page of Dark Crisis, killing yourself. And then you go, okay, now I'm going to do Wonder Woman, only one character. It's going to be easier. But then Tom gives you the second issue, and she's fighting a giant army, and there's, a bunch of soldiers and whatever. You were right back into having to draw a ton of characters. So how's the balance been in terms of is it easier than doing a team book? Is it tougher? I know you're
Yeah.
always pushing yourself. But what are your thoughts on the workload?
Even the second issue was like easy. Not easy, but not that much work because that crisis was hell. It was literally hundreds of characters, and every issue we move on, it was like 50 extra characters and a week less for doing it, So it was a hell, and every month was even hellish again and again, and pushing and pushing. So when I finished that, I felt like the hard part of my job it's already done, and now everything seems a little bit less. It's like sometimes okay, I can handle this, no problem. I get like I get like trained really, really hard on that crisis. So here I'm just having fun, And speaking of you were asking about the Wonder Woman fighting the military USA, I felt like I couldn't go really far when drawing this. Yeah, she's smashing tanks and punching, but I didn't make any tank like exploding or something really hard because I was like holding back a little bit because I didn't want to seem like she was killing soldiers or something.
Oh yeah.
So there's punches, there are tanks breaking, but nothing too extreme. I was like holding a little bit on that part too. It was a lot of fun. This was is another of the pages I put the lettering myself. And the stars that it's like a main theme on the series from day one. Before starting, I was like thinking, what can I put on the series visually that makes like a brand for us for a run different from the rest? And I was like thinking of using the stars in a lot of different ways. And now it's kind of fun. It's how can I put the stars in different ways, like for showing an impact or paneling something like a border. Or I don't know, getting different uses for them, and it's fun.
Yeah, from that to another aspect of the character, we'll show a page here from issue 3, and I just love this page. She's thrown her tiara outside the elevator; it's knocked everybody out. But she looks so beautiful here, because that's one of the other aspects. You mentioned what makes her different, Tom. The other thing that makes her different from Superman and Batman, she's a woman. She is, sexy and attractive, and there is that, female aspect of her. Does it make her any less? of a warrior or of a hero. But you've been done a great job of capturing that as well, Daniel, of making her vulnerable, especially when we start talking about issue four, showing her compassion and what have you. So I feel like this page and then the next page, the splash with the invisible jet in the background from issue four, I just get the sense, Daniel, that you specifically on these two pages are having a heck of a lot of fun drawing this book.
Yeah, but it's so hard to. She's the most difficult to write, and for me, she's the most difficult to draw. I always say, like, for me, Superman was the most difficult to draw, but Wonder Woman is even harder because she has the same things that make Superman difficult. But on top of that, being a woman for me is even more difficult to draw because I don't know. It's easier for me to draw men than women. It's just simple as that. And the contradictions she has, same than Superman, that she needs to look super strong but super gentle at the same time and super warm. This is really hard to put on the paper. The subtle stuff, that make her super big, super strong, because this is what I wanted to show from day one. But at the same time, someone that makes you feel comfortable and is like peace and relaxed when you see her, And you mentioned the beauty. Yeah, she's the most beautiful, but I wanted to show her beauty, not in a, I don't know how to say in English, sorry, not in a horny way. I don't know if I'm saying right. I want
Yeah,
to
no, we
show
got you.
her beauty like a beauty when you look at some Greek statue, something like that. That's the most beautiful thing you've seen, but not in a sexual way, more in a, like looking to a god, something that just is coming down from the heavens. And this is super hard to put on the paper. And almost 10 issues later, or nine, or I don't know, I keep struggling every time she's in the page. I will finish my deadlines a lot sooner if I didn't get stuck so many times on her face or her body. It's a struggle, but when it's done more right, more or less, it's super satisfying at the same time.
Yeah, we're talking about, third issue here. Now, Tom, when you were writing this script, had you started to see some of Daniel's artwork come in? Did that start to influence your script at all? You're like, oh man, he's really going above and beyond. I can write fewer lines and what have you. He's just nailing it.
I knew he would nail it. I was never, I have rare skills. I'm not good at playing basketball or running or raising my children. No, that's okay. I'm good at raising children. But I do have one magical power, and that I can just like, I studied Daniel's art, and then I can read my scripts and see what Daniel's going to draw. I don't know how, it probably comes from 40 years of reading comic books. So I was dead on. When he started producing paint, I was blown away. But I was like, yeah, that's. I mean, it was what I thought it would be plus another 50%. It was like, it was great. So I was, by the time I had gotten to that issue, the Hollywood stuff had kicked in heavily. Before this, I'd been writing comics straight ahead. We're at like the Human Target. I'd finished issue 12 by the time Greg had gotten to page like two of issue one. But with the Hollywood stuff throwing off my deadlines, now I was a little closer to deadline. So I probably had seen his art by this time. I mean, I just knew he could do anything. And now I just had to put places for him to show off. But that's all. And that whole issue was built around that double page splash. I was like, how can I get to the point? It's like Bushmiller famously wrote Nancy comic strips. He would think of the gag, whatever the last panel was, and he would go back and find the first three panels. That's very much how I wrote Wonder Woman 3, whereas I thought of the gag of what is awesome about an invisible jet. And I was like, well, the fact that it's invisible and then become visible, I was like, how can I get her into a moment where she's, says, I have an invisible jet, and a jet appears behind her. And that's how I constructed the whole issue, just because I knew that would be just, I don't know, it was. And then I pitched that to my 13-year-old daughter, and she goes crazy, and I know it's going to work. It's basically
Yeah,
what
I mean,
I
the first time I saw that moment, the way you scripted it and then the way you presented it, Daniel, I literally got chills. I literally got goosebumps when I saw that. I was like, oh, that is so
That's
awesome.
awesome.
So yeah, you guys nailed it. And then you
It
mentioned.
sucks for a writer because I was like, I can't make that. You get the vision in your head and you're like, it's got to be a double page because it wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't work, horizontally. It has to go vertically. And you're like, shit, that's two pages with one line of dialogue. That means the rest of this comic has to have more.
It's always pacing. It's always real estate. Well, you mentioned issue four and kind of going into what Steve Orlando was saying about her and I've had this conversation with Steve as well. Her superpower is how compassionate she is more than anything else, and Daniel really being the one to kind of inform that. So you were closer to deadline. That gave you a little bit of a chance to talk this over. So let me go to you first, Daniel. Why was it important, do you think, for this character and for this story that you and Tom are telling to have an issue devoted to, with all the stuff she has going on, all the crisis, for lack of a better word, that she has going on with the Amazons, she's going to stop and take time out to spend time with this little boy Jack, who's a huge Wonder Woman fan and unfortunately has this horrible disease. Why was it important for you, and you think, to put this issue in there?
Well, Tom was kind enough to ask me some ideas, like what do you want to draw for issue one, for if you have any ideas, something you would like. And I was like, yeah, I'm feeling that the first three issues were like awesome and amazing, and we were showing how badass and how awesome Wonder Woman is. But I felt like we need to show also sooner than later. Not awesome, not how awesome she is or badass. Also, how empathetic, I don't know how to say, sorry, my English sucks. How good
Perfect.
she is, how kind she is with other people, how she cares. And I just asked it for a page, something like, I was like, let's make an all-star Superman moment for Wonder Woman. I think we all remember that page when Superman hugs the girl. Let's try to do something like this for our series. Let's try to put something that people can feel and feel like Wonder Woman is the best because she's the most kindest and the most awesome in this way too. And Tom was like, okay, and he just gave the whole issue for that. I was like, okay, he took it serious. And it was the best script. When I read it, I was like super it was like very emotional, and I was like, okay, this needs to be drawn properly because it's an awesome issue. I'll do my best to get the feelings right. And it was hard for the acting, and when you need to, it's for me it's a lot easier to draw a punch and a big explosion than something that someone that is just smiling happy, that's, this part is a lot harder. And I don't know, I tried my best.
Yeah, you definitely give us a few moments. The scene where Jack's in the invisible jet, and he's freaking out because they're, flying. Not to, put you on the spot, Tom, or cause any issues or whatever, but it sounds like
Oh,
maybe
that's a hard way to start a question.
some of your writing royalties or some of your part of your check for this issue should have gone to Daniel. He's come up with such a brilliant idea for the narrative for this issue.
One time I did an issue with Mikel. I mean, oh my God, what's 8, 7 years ago? And it was all double page splashes. And then I put my dialogue on it. And when I got the issue back from Mikel, I was like, I did not enough work for this. I want to share a co-plotter credit with you. And I gave it to him. And to this day, I look at my royalty. I was like, why is this one issue of Batman not? Oh, fucking Mikel stole my money again.
Seriously though, Daniel came to you with this, hey, let's show the other side of her. You must have been like, oh yeah, brilliant. Why haven't we done this yet?
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic. Jay always has fantastic suggestions. I steal from him as much as I steal from anybody else. I remember, but that was it was like, yeah, can we do something that, like, probably if people ranked comic book Superman moments, that'd probably be number one. I think would probably be the All-Star Superman suicide page. And so that's tough because number one, you're aiming so high, and number two, the most obvious version of that has already been done. So I was thinking like 1,000 different scenarios to have this be one page, and I was just thinking of this and this, and you can't do a suicide against your suicide. He already did suicide, and so does she save someone? And then what's the And I'm sure again, stealing from my son. My son's into wrestling, and we're talking about John Cena and how he does all the he famously does the make a wish thing all the time. And I was like, it just I remember I was in my basement, just like, oh, I'll do Wonder Woman make a wish. And then you have the second thought, which is exactly what you mentioned, which was like, I can't do her. Why is she going to stop? She's in the middle of an incredible crisis right now with the whole world turned against her. She's going to stop all of that to do make a wish. It just doesn't work plot wise, Tom. And then you have a third thought, which is like, no, that's why it's good. Because in the middle of all of that chaos, she stops to do this. She's still that moment of empathy is more important to her than all sort of the violence around her. And so it was kind of a three-step process. And once I'd gone through that, then I mean, what an easy issue to write, because all I had to do was Daniel had done all the heavy lifting and then would do all the heavy lifting. All I had to do was, let's just execute that idea, which was fairly simple.
Yeah, and it was done brilliantly. And then we went from that to issue five, excuse me, which interesting. I want to ask about the timing of this as far as Penguin. So issue five, we get a chance to see the kind of the villain team come together. And also, you mentioned Wonder Woman being the sister. Obviously there are any number of heroes that are going to help her, but especially, you start talking about Cassie and Yara and Donna Troy, but her wanting to keep them out of harm's way, doing what she was doing. This came out sort of close in time to the recruitment issue you did for Penguin with
Yes,
the
they
old
have odd
Batman, yeah,
parallels.
with the 4th of July, the old Batman of the Outsiders villain. So co coincidental you didn't write these like close together.
No, I think Penguin came quite earlier, like months earlier, is my recollection. Yeah, because Penguin, yeah, that it was yeah, that's what I think. Penguin came first and came just a little bit early. Sometimes I realize I do things like that. I was like, oh crap. And then there are weird parallels in Penguin, because I'm writing these two comics where Wonder Woman is the best person in DCU, and Oswald Cobblepot is the absolute worst. It is kind of funny to look at them as kind of talking to each other, at least in my head. I get to do it, but both of them are about like why it's awesome to be the worst and why it's awesome to be the best. So it's very funny. Yeah,
And
no,
I
it
don't
was.
think anybody ever really talks about, they don't use the term rogues gallery, right? Like we hear that with Superman to a lesser extent, Flash for sure, and then of course Batman. But there are villains that are really amazing villains that are probably a little bit underused, to be honest, that you specifically associate with Wonder Woman. Was it fun to kind of bring them back around and get them all together in one story?
It was absolutely fun. That was again along this like don't deny joy. I wrote a whole, not, I don't call it manifesto, but like sort of rules I was going to use in this Wonder Woman run. And one of the rules was no Wonder Girls in the beginning, because I was just like, I want this to be focused on Wonder Woman, not on, she needs to be the center of this book. And then as soon as Wonder Woman was announced, and like at cons or online, people were sort of like, I want to see this villain. I want to see Yara. I want to see Cassie. I want to see Don, like, over and over and over again. And I was like, Tom, the whole point of this book is don't deny joy. Like, that's like the theme. And I'm learning this from Bruno and Tom, what they did on Nightwing, having written a Nightwing at Grayson, where I was very much sort of told by editorial we couldn't do all the things that Tom did, and watching him do it and be like, that's how I should have done it when we were on it. I was like, all right, I'm going to break my rules immediately. I'm going to bring in the Wonder Girls and bring in these villains. But the villains were not, I wouldn't say it was fun to bring in the villains. It was hard. Wonder Woman's villains are very difficult, much like herself, because all of them have four origin stories. Some of them have changed identities halfway through and then changed back. Look at any Wikipedia article for any villain and you'll find they have to be divided into pre-crisis and post-crisis and golden age and then rebirth and the new 52, and none of them are consistent throughout. And so it's hard sort of choosing which personality and which origin story works. And then on top of all of that, there's like sexism, horrible sexism mixed in with some of the origin stories. So you have to kind of decide what of that you can root out. So yeah, it's Wonder Woman's villains are they have potential to be amazing, but it's you gotta it's there's a lot of rock to crack through to get to the statue.
Yeah, and here you are, Daniel, going, okay, I got this single character book. It's not hell like Dark Crisis was. And then you get to this issue, Todd, like, all right, every Wonder Girl's in there, and all of a sudden you got like six, seven villains. But at the same time, you get a chance to draw something new, new costumes, what have you. So give us your thoughts on this issue. Was this one more challenging because you had so many characters? Was it fun? Was it both?
It was a lot of fun because in every issue we're doing like different stuff. Every issue feels like a whole story on itself, you know. All of them for make part of something bigger, but it's like a single story is one each of them, and this was like I'm not it's not worrying for me more characters because the thing is not how much characters appear on the book. The thing is that if they appear on the same panels all the time, you know. So there are seven villains, okay, but they just share the spot in one page in one splash, but then they are separated in panels. One is doing one thing. So this is not my extra work. The thing, it's really hard when the seven are always on the same panels, like the Dark Crisis. It's 50 characters and all of them are together all the time, you know. That is what makes it a hell. But in a comic book can be 50 characters, but if they don't share space all the time, it's not a problem. It's just drawing different people all the time. What made this issue especially hard was not more characters. It was like things like drawing a fist fight for 3 pages. This is what is difficult for me because it's like, again, another movement that needs to be super clear. But it's not a flashy movement. They are like steady. How do you make a steady movement look interesting and that reader gets exactly what is going on in every moment of the fist fight? This kind of stuff is what make it difficult, and sometimes I'm used to, like you said, Action Comics, Dark Crisis, very splash pages all the time. So sometimes I feel myself like thinking this needs to be a repeated shot. It's the only way it's gonna work. This whole page needs to be the same shot, four times, for example, and just moving subtle because it's how it's gonna work this way. Changing the camera, it's gonna make it messy and not make sense. But then I feel like lazy, you know, like I'm feeling bad, like maybe I should move the camera a little bit. But it's like no. This is the way. This is my fight on this series. Sometimes, like when I repeat the shot, I know it's the right thing to do, but I feel like a lazy guy or something like that.
No, I
And
mean, I'm
I love a repeated shot, so but it's fine. I have the same problem with this series where it's like I always feel like if I don't put in three captions into every panel, it's like, oh, I'm lazy writing. Why am I? So the two of us are fighting. Sometimes you have to be lazy to make it better.
I think you just
Exactly.
you have to trust your instincts because it's definitely working. I mean, we repeated shot and little dialogue, you know, immediately my mind goes to Diana and Cass, right, with the arrows. That, like you said, Daniel, that's not going to work any other way. That's the way that it needs to work. And yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to know something funny? In this issue particularly, there's many pages with repeated shots, and I was like, hey, maybe I'm doing this too much. Maybe I'm getting too comfortable with this. Then I pick like Strange Adventures, and I start counting how many repeated shots Mitch put on the pages, and I was like, okay, I'm on the track. I'm fine. I'm not doing it too much. If
As long
Mitch
as you
can do it, I can do it
yeah, exactly.
No, Clayman laughed at me, and in making fun of me, he nailed me. Where he's like, Tom writes flip book comics. He writes comics where you can just flip through them and you see the characters slowly moving across the screen. And it's 100% true. It's how I do it. I don't know whether it's a tick or a feature, but it's how I write comics. But it's worked for 10 years. I don't think it's going anywhere at this point. I love
Let's
it.
talk a little bit
I
about
love it.
issue six, which probably my favorite issue of the series so far. Just iconic shot after iconic shot, starting off with sort of a quiet moment with Diana and Steve, sort of talking about the status of things. And then all of a sudden, this giant hand bursting up out of the ground, Giganta. And that kind of set the tone for this amazing action-packed issue. So with so much action going on, and we'll talk a little bit about the tension in a minute, but with so much action going on, where does this rank, Daniel, in terms of the difficulty for drawing each issue?
Well, this one was the easiest one, I think, for me, because that's what I'm used to draw for 10 years already. You know, like action, epicness. It's more my comfort zone, and this was like a delight when I read the script. My girlfriend works on the side next to me on another table, and I was like, yeah. Yes, I love this. And she was like,
Too
dude, keep your voice down. I'm on a meeting online, you know? I was like, when I read the monolith thing, the page, I got the chills, and I was like, yeah, I have to nail this because this is too awesome. I love that script. And then we went to New York in the middle of it. I was like with a friend, Blue Beetle artist, Adrian Gutierrez, and I was explaining him the whole script, and this is going to be awesome. And he was like, yeah, this is fire. This issue was so much fun to do.
And you guys got a chance to do an homage to the classic Linda Carter costume change for Wonder Woman, and I again difficult to do, right? It's such a movement in the show. You know, she's spinning. This is a static image. So whose idea was it, and then how difficult was it to execute?
It's Tom's idea, yeah.
But I was ripping it off from Daniel's first Wonder Woman cover, where
Yes.
he had done the spin for his first Wonder Woman 800 cover. So
Yeah.
I'd already, it was me ripping off him. So it was both of us, maybe. I mean, from the beginning, from what that manifesto was told you, I was like, let's go back to the things we love about Wonder Woman and make them and just show how awesome they are, and stuff like the. You know, her taking off the tiara and it being like Captain America's shield, the coolness of a rope being like Indy's whip, and I mean, I when I started this, her spinning around and changing costumes is awesome. And I don't know, or I've never met a little girl from my nieces to my daughter's friends to whoever who doesn't do that when they're 6 years old and think that's cool.
Yeah.
In the same way. When I was a kid, I would, clutch my fists together and I would imagine Wolverine's claws snicking out. You know, like it's just like it's almost built into our consciousness how awesome some of the things our superheroes do are. So putting that in the comics seemed utterly natural.
Yeah.
And the challenge of drawing it,
I feel
Daniel,
like
like old hat at this point?
excuse me?
Was it just kind of easy for you? You'd already, Tom mentioned you did it on the cover of 800.
Well, lucky my girlfriend is very supportive, and I was like, can I take 4 pictures of you spinning around to get reference, right? And yeah, you need to take off the jacket now. Okay, we're good. You know, like she sometimes needs to be the model. And yeah, it was a lot of fun again, and I'm proud because I feel like we're embracing all the Wonder Woman lore and stuff that makes the series and the character great, and not holding back. I feel like sometimes maybe some people think there are things that are maybe corny or that they are like a shame or some stuff. That no, let's not put this because we're going with everything, and I think this is cool. I'm proud of it. We're going with the invisible jet, with the spin, with. Everything that makes her so awesome with no thinking too much. We just embrace the Wonder Woman lore, and I'm proud of it, and I think we're doing good in this part of the job, you know. And then the spin was an awesome moment, and then Tomeu comes again with making everything better because he decided to color the panels in red, blue, and yellow, that this was his idea, and everything starts to make sense, you know, and it's awesome to see the power of the process. Tomeu, it's a color artist that I want to shout out often because he just brings so much to the series. It will not be the same without him. Sometimes we forgot about color artists, people forgot about them. And he's so important for the series. This issue is a proof of that, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so often, especially in Tom's books, I don't know why this happens, Tom, but they're colored in dark, somber tones. I don't know why that would be, but Wonder Woman and this book feels so classically superheroic. And I always say, when you're doing something that wants to feel timeless and classic and very, superhero centric, you use those bright primary colors, make it pop off the page, and it gives it that classic feel. Yeah, and Tomeo's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, I've worked with Tomeo on in Heroes in Crisis and on a bunch of issues of Batman with both Tony Daniel and Clay Mann. And it's hard to say I'm used to his miracle, but it's, I mean, he's the best at what he does. I mean, you get the pages in, and you're just like, yeah, you can't believe. And it's what he does is hard. Because when people try to do what he do, that it's easy to fail because he renders in a way that's not cheap. So the same way it would be easy for people to render like he does and make it look like cheesy 90s kind of coloring or mid-aughts kind of coloring. And but he brings a subtlety to it that makes it not lifelike, but more comic book lifelike, that it doesn't make it cheesy. You have to be so good to be doing he's taking a ton of risks in what he does, and it's amazing.
And then you're just, are you in planning this issue and scripting it, did you just walk outside and say, all right, let me look around and see what monuments do I want to destroy? What part of downtown DC is going to get completely jacked up? I mean, she just the Washington Monument. I mean, what a moment.
The reason she's buried in the ground was is because when my kids were little, like they're now 13 and 14, or no, God no, they're 14 and 15. But when they were little, I used to take them on walks in the Washington Mall near the Washington Monument. And I told them this story. There was a giant buried beneath the mall, and like the Washington Monument was kind of covered his nose, and the Lincoln Memorial was where his feet are. They just loved this story. So it's been a running joke that there's a giant buried underneath the mall for 10 years in my house. So that was a shout out to my kids. They could see there actually is a giant, and that's why. And that's why I had to create the explanation in the next page is why is the giant buried underneath the ground? It was because so I've had that image of a hand coming out of in front of the Washington Monument in my head for 10 years. It was fun to see it like actually exist.
Actually got it. Yeah, actually got it in a book.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing I have to ask about, I talked about this in our review when the book came out, is this idea of the tension in the book, the tension between what's going on with the Sovereign, what's going on with public perception, what Wonder Woman truly represents. And I think Daniel's nailing it artistically in this page in particular that I have on the screen right now, with Grail on one side and Diana on the other, really illustrates that sort of tension. So is that something you're aware of, Tom, or you think it's come out organically, just the push and pull of all these different aspects of her that you've mentioned that are being contrasted against the antagonist? And then we'll throw it over to you, Daniel, to talk about the visual of that.
Yeah, I very much wanted to give her, when you write Batman, you can bring in the Joker because it's on some ways like a dark picture of the Dark Knight, right? Like that, and it brings out the sort of the best in both of them because they're opposites of each other. One is chaos and one is order on some level. And when you do Superman, you bring out Lex, and like one is selflessness and one is greed, one is strength and one is weakness. Wonder Woman didn't really have that, so that's what I've sort of brought out Sovereign is sort of to be like her Lex Luthor. I mean, she has villains that are sort of that level, Cheetah, but Cheetah's not sort of a dark reflection of her. It's a much sort of more complicated relationship. But yeah, here Grail had to sort of stand in for Sovereign as sort of being a dark reflection. Yeah, I like the daughter. I mean, it just writes itself, right? Daughter of Themyscira, daughter of Apocalypse. It's fun.
Yeah, but
I
there's also the mystery aspect, right? I feel like Wonder Woman, she's more open, and that certainly that, even with this extradition act, she's still out there in front. Sovereign has always been behind the scenes again, since they're so antithetical. At this point in the story, there's been some debate between Rocky and myself. She knows there's somebody back there pulling the strings, but she's not aware of who it is at this point, right?
She meets the Sovereign in issue 8. Issue 7 is a like a I don't know what you'd call it, an interlude or a chant. It's a mint. It's a very soft, fun issue, kind of like the double date issues we did at Batman. Daniel it took this one off. We have Gillian March comes in, and yeah, Slacker Daniel only did 6 in a row and 2 specials. Jesus Christ! Fucking why don't you work for a living, man? But yeah, it's so issue 7 is Superman and Wonder Woman go to a mall to buy Batman a birthday gift. It's very silly. It's a space mall, so at least there's that. But it's very fun. It's very fun and silly. It's a break from sort of this all smash. And then when we hit the next arc, which is a 3-issue arc called Sacrifice, we've seen that Wonder Woman has been sort of taken hostage, and she meets for the first time, she meets the Sovereign in issue 8, which Daniel's already drawn, in a very sort of tense kind of situation. And we'll see a lot more Sovereign Wonder Woman interactions as we go forward. So she learns who he is there.
Gotcha. And what about, I talked, Daniel, about kind of the tension in the story. And you're doing a brilliant job of kind of putting that artistically on the page as well. Always the push and pull between these characters. Again, is that something that's just kind of coincidental, or is it something you're aware of that, when you draw a villain, it is sort of the opposite of what Wonder Woman represents. Or is it just kind of instinctually for you?
No, I actually tried. I tried really hard, so I'm happy you mentioned it, because it means it worked at least.
Yeah.
And yeah, this page, Tom can tell that I seem like a mess when I'm working because I draw the pages in no specific order. I draw panels in no specific order. Maybe someday I just send half of page 2, and tomorrow I'll send page 18. But this has a reason, and it's because I want to move fast. So when I'm not seeing 100% sure a panel or a page, I just skip it and keep moving with the pages that I already see, you know. And this one I was happy because two panels. I tend to see the action in a horizontal way, so my first instinct was to cut the page in half. But then I was like feeling that something was missing because the figures, if I want to show the full bodies, it's the first appearance of Grave, so I need to show her full. But just in half page, the drawing was like small and not very powerful, with a lot of room for the background that was not needed. So I was like struggling that what can I do? I tried to put the camera more close to the faces, but I felt like this is not an introduction. And then I tried to think out of my box that it's always horizontal. And I was like, hey, let's go vertical, like Western, when they show you one guy and then the other and the tension, because before the glass, you know, and I think it was a good decision.
Yeah, it works. It works brilliantly. And
Yeah,
again, I
it's
mean,
so good.
yeah, and not just this panel, not just this issue, but for the entire book, there's been this tension. Partly because of the situation the Amazons are in, and your art is, in a very subtle way, is adding to that. And so it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Last question, Tom. There's the Amazon attacks story going on right now as well. How much collaboration? How much is a crossover? I mean, obviously, it's dealing with the Extradition Act as well. There's some fallout to that. So how, like, are you, did you guys plan it out? Did you talk to Josie Campbell? Like, how much collaboration has there been?
I just answer questions if they need me. I've always been of the mind in all my years in the comic industry is not to tell anyone how to write their comics. So I'm always like, I'm here if you have questions. I want to know what inspires you and do your best. So yeah, that's she they're doing their own thing, and it's coming out great.
And it's interesting story in its own right. Obviously, listeners, if you've been seeing our DC spotlights, then our thoughts on it as well. So, again, gentlemen, always great to see you. Look forward to the next time I see you both in person. Probably San Diego,
Yeah.
I guess we'll all be.
Yeah, absolutely. San Diego.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
Well, why don't we let everybody know where they can follow you online if they want to check out your work, know when other things are coming out, what have you. Where's the best place to follow you online, Daniel?
Right now it's on Instagram, probably. I'm not using Twitter that much. It's Daniel underscore Sampiere underscore art.
Great, and I'll put a link.
There
Yeah, I'll put a link to the Instagram in the show notes. So if you're having trouble finding Daniel's Instagram, you can
Okay.
go there. What about you,
Okay.
Tom?
Yeah, I've dropped Twitter entirely, so I'm on Instagram now, and I'm Tom King underscore TK. So my name underscore my initials.
Again, link in the show notes, everybody, if you're having trouble finding it. Gentlemen, I want to thank you personally for Wonder Woman. Far and away, my favorite run on the character ever, and in my mind, kind of the defining run for her. And, for a character that's been around as long as she has, I feel like she's been lacking a defining run. So you're doing a fantastic job. Thank you so much.
Oh, that
Thank
means
you.
it a ton to me, and also makes my day fucking harder because now I gotta write the next issue. Thanks for setting me up there, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Daniel, and an extra shout out to you. I've been wanting to do this, been wanting to have you both on, but everybody, Daniel's the one that reached out and was like, hey, I haven't been on in a while. We need to come on and talk some Wonder Woman. And, we dragged Tom along as well. So thanks for getting me off my butt to get this done, Daniel. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And to all you listeners, we want to thank you as well. We really appreciate the support. We appreciate you tuning in as always, and we will talk to you next time.